Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler, and you can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball-related from Sunday, March 30th. We'll start it off by looking at the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the injuries. The first one we've got is relief pitcher Jesus Tinoco, who landed on the 15-day IL with a lower back strain. Right now, his timeline remains unclear, but you never really know with back strains. They can be minimum stays or they can be lengthy stays. You never really know. Right now, this seems to be a minimum stint for Tinoco, but we'll get an idea, a clearer idea of the timeline soon. Right now, that means Calvin Fauché is clear for saves in Miami. He should be the number one option for saves. And Anthony Bender should see an uptick in holds, though I think Bender should have an option or should have the ability to take over for saves. I think he's better than Fauché. We'll see how that plays out, though, throughout the season. Right now, Fauché, the number one option for saves in Miami. Next, we have starting pitcher Max Scherzer, who landed on the 15-day IL with right thumb inflammation. Apparently, he's been dealing with this injury for quite some time. He was dealing with it during spring training, and apparently the thumb has been bothering Scherzer for at least a couple of years. And I can totally understand anytime you screw up your finger or anything, it can bother you for quite some time, especially when you're using it a lot. And it's his right thumb too, so he's got to use it in certain ways, especially on all of his pitches, to make sure they break the way that he wants them to. So if the thumb's not feeling good, the pitches aren't going to be doing well. He really wasn't that bad in his debut. He only lasted three innings, but Scherzer, I think he only allowed one or two runs, but apparently that thumb is still bothering him. It should only be a minimum stay, but he's going to try to get that thumb right. In the meantime, Easton Lucas was recalled from the minors for the Blue Jays, but it looks like Yariel Rodriguez is going to be the next man up in the rotation. He just pitched yesterday out of the bullpen. He actually got a hold, so it is sort of weird that he is the one slated to head the rotation. I know he was a former starter, especially when he was pitching in, one of the Central American countries. Yariel Rodriguez, though, looks to be headed back to the rotation for the Blue Jays, at least for the time being, until Max Scherzer returns from the injured list with his right thumb inflammation. Next, we have relief pitcher Albert Suarez, who landed on the 15-day IL with right shoulder inflammation. He experienced diminished velocity throughout spring training, and that stuck during his debut on opening day, so clearly still dealing with something in his shoulder. That's Albert Suarez. Matt Bowman had his contract selected from the minors in a corresponding move, so he'll take over in the bullpen, though he doesn't have the ability to go multiple innings that Suarez does. So we'll see if the Blue Jays are, if the Orioles are able to find somebody that can fulfill that role, that multiple inning role that Suarez was performing for the last, at least last year, and then for the start of this season. The last IL placement we have is third baseman Josh Jung, who landed on the 10-day IL with neck spasms. He dealt with neck stiffness during spring training, so it's no surprise to see him land on the IL with a related neck injury. He got off to a pretty good start to start the season. I think he was 3-for-7 to start the year, so hopefully the neck stiffness is minor and it won't keep him out for too long. Right now, he's eligible to return April 8th, obviously 10 days after being placed on the IL, so Jung could be back in the minimum time. While he's gone, though, Josh Smith is expected to take over at the hot corner for the Rangers, though he was out of the lineup on Sunday dealing with a quad injury. I think he'll be okay, but we could see some Ezekiel Duran at the hot corner, definitely against lefties. Duran should get some shots. Smith is a left-handed batter, so not the best against left-handed pitchers. You want to get Duran in there so we can see them splitting time at the hot corner, especially with Josh Smith dealing with a quad injury. And this is all a result, once again, of Josh Jung landing on the 10-day IL with neck spasms. Next, we'll look at some transactions. We actually just have one involving outfielder Esteury Ruiz, who is a member of the A's organization, but will likely not be a member of the A's major league roster, as he was designated for assignment on Sunday. Very surprising, considering he was one of the main returns in the deal that sent Sean Murphy. It's hard to keep all the Braves A's trades in order, but I think this was the Sean Murphy trade. The Brewers got their hands in there to land William Contreras from the Braves, and in return sent Ruiz to the A's. And they haven't really given him the chances that I think he's deserved. He had that first season where he broke the American League rookie stolen base record, and then has just gotten nothing since then. He got off to a pretty good start last year and then just spent the rest of the years toiling away in the minors. This year, not even going to get the opportunity. Now he's off the 40-man roster. I think if you've got him in, you know, obviously 15 team mixed leagues, redraft leagues, you got to drop him there. He's not going to be up for a while. And definitely in dynasty leagues, unless you're in something really deep, like AL only 15 team or one of those ridiculous 30 team dynasty leagues, I think Ruiz is definitely droppable in basically every league right now. And the last thing we'll discuss is some news as third baseman Jose Ramirez had imaging on his sprained right wrist. I'm not sure it's confirmed that it's sprained, but that's what I was hearing on the broadcast when it happened. Luckily, the imaging came back negative for Joe Ram, so he will avoid an IL stint, and he was actually available to pinch hit on Sunday. So apparently the injury for Joe Ram is not too bad. What I'm really concerned about, knowing Joe Ram, because he's been on my fantasy team for a couple of years, so you know I know him like one of my best friends. You know, I don't even know, I know his middle name, we're like that close, but anyway, Joe Ram, I think he's the type of player that's going to push really hard to play through this injury because he never wants to miss a game, and I feel like that could affect him. I mean, wrists are really important in, you know, being a human, but definitely when you're playing baseball and batting, it could really affect Joe Ram. So what I'm concerned about is that he pushes to play through this wrist injury, and then as a result, we see a downturn in performance on the field, and then he doesn't take the time he needs to fully recover, and then he never really gets back to what we want. So I'm hoping that this wrist injury for Joe Ram doesn't linger throughout the year and affect his performance. Right now, we're in the clear, no IL stint, but fingers crossed he doesn't see a downturn in performance moving forward. All right, now we'll take a look at the notable performances from Sunday, a day in which we had 13 games. Four teams were off on Sunday. We'll start things off leading off with our hitters, starting off with second baseman Jazz Chisholm Jr., who helped the Yankees to win versus the Brewers, going 3-for-4 with 3 runs, a pair of home runs, and 5 runs batted in. That's 3 home runs on the year now for Jazz, who has a 1667 OPS to start the year. The first one traveled 346 feet at 109 miles per hour. The second one, 342 feet at 100 miles per hour. This is what you're really going to get with Jazz, especially in Yankee Stadium, are those short home runs into the porch. But the exit velocity suggests that these should have been home runs. I think on StatCast, on Baseball Savant, it suggested that these were home runs in about half of ballpark. So not a Yankee Stadium special, but still some lucky home runs there from Jazz at only 340 feet, but a pair of them. And I think he's going to be really dope here in full season in New York, batting in the middle of that lineup, which I think is definitely improved. It's, even though they don't have Stanton, adding Bellinger and Goldschmidt and getting those new bats, that definitely does a lot to Austin Wells at the top of the order as well. Jazz has been batting fourth or fifth so far to start the year. He's going to have plenty of RBI opportunities if Judge isn't driving everybody in before him. He should have plenty of opportunities to drive and run. It's going to be a great season here from Jazz as long as he can stay healthy. That's always been his problem throughout his career, is staying on the field. So I think he's going to be great. Full season in Yankee Stadium should be awesome from Jazz Chisholm Jr. Next, we have outfielder Victor Scott, who plays for the Cardinals. He helped them to a win versus the Twins, going 1-for-4 with a run, a home run, 3 runs batted in, and a steal to complete the combo meal. He's up to 1 home run and 3 steals on the year now. And Victor Scott, that home run went 396 feet at 100 miles per hour. And he's really carrying over that improved power from spring training that I talked up a little bit at the end of spring training. I think he had 4 or 5 home runs during spring training, which was notable because Victor Scott is known as a speed guy, a really good fielder in center field, and a guy who stole 90 plus bases in the minor leagues a couple of years ago. So definitely somebody who's known for his speed, but not really much for his bat. So if he can carry over that improved power, which apparently he already is doing by hitting a home run in the first 3 games of the season, the first weekend of the season, clearly Scott is looking to take his game to another level, at least offensively. And that speed by itself makes him must roster in basically every roto league. As I mentioned, 90 plus stolen bases a couple of years ago in the minor leagues. This is a guy who's got the ability to, you know, do what Esteban Ruiz did in his rookie season, just steal a boatload of bases, 40 to 50 bases. I don't think he's out of the question for Victor Scott if he's playing every single day, and he should play every single day because his defense is incredible in center field for the Cardinals. I know they have Michael Ciani, who can play really good in center field, but I think Victor Scott's going to be pretty incredible, and if that bat continues to improve, I think he's going to be worth rostering in every single league, if not every single roto league. Next, we have designated hitter Kyle Manzardo, who helped the Guardians to win in Kansas City, going 2-for-5 with a run, a home run, and 2 runs batted in. It was his second home run of the year, and he's gotten off to a really hot start, batting .455 with an 1844 OPS to open the year. And Manzardo is displaying the power that he failed to transfer to the majors in his debut. That I think I was pretty pumped for his debut last year with the Guardians because they really don't have a lot of those guys who can hit for power. Obviously, you got Joe Ram, but losing Josh Naylor, I think, was huge for this team. And Manzardo was supposed to be, or is supposed to be, the guy who replaces him. What he did last year would not have been enough to replace what Naylor brought to the table. But Manzardo is finally taking that step in the majors to produce like he did in the minor leagues. And the only problem I see with Manzardo is that he's currently DH only, at least in most leagues. I haven't double checked on Yahoo. He's probably got shortstop eligibility there, but he's currently DH only in NFBC and in ESPN. So I'm not super excited about rostering somebody who's DH only. And it doesn't look like that's changing anytime soon, because you got Carlos Santana playing first base every day. And I think they think of him as a superior defender over Manzardo. So I don't expect Manzardo's eligibility to change anytime soon. So if you're one of those guys who drafted Shohei Ohtani, this is not somebody for you. But if you got, if you're in one of those leagues with two utility spots, or you just have an open utility spot, this is definitely a guy to go grab. He's got the prospect pedigree to definitely continue to mash at the plate. I don't expect that to slow down anytime soon. My only thing holding me back is the eligibility. And the last hitter we'll talk about is first baseman Tyler Soderstrom, who did all he could, but the A's lost in Seattle. He went 2-for-3 with a run, a home run, an RBI, and a walk. It was his third home run of the year, traveling 366 feet at 99 miles per hour. And Soderstrom has gotten off to an incredible start as well, living up to his first round pedigree. He was drafted a few years ago as a catcher, and I think that's something to keep an eye on. Soderstrom was still catching last year. He was catching in spring training, and in Yahoo leagues, you really need only one game to get eligibility. So if Soderstrom can catch a game, he could be invaluable in Yahoo leagues. But nonetheless, he's still, I think, worth rostering as a first baseman in the majority of leagues. He's put on an impressive power display in Seattle, and that's really difficult to do in that ballpark. So I'm wondering how that power is going to transfer out of it. If he's hit 3 home runs during a series in Seattle to open the season, I'm wondering what he can do, especially in that minor league ballpark that the A's will find themselves in home games. So I think Soderstrom is somebody that needs to be rostered everywhere. Big breakout incoming. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll check out some notable starting pitching performances from yesterday, starting with Nick Pivetta, who took on the Braves and helped the Padres to a win, tossing 7 scoreless innings, allowing just 1 hit. He walked nobody while striking out 4, inducing 8 whiffs with 29% CSW across 82 pitches. And this is exactly what I was hoping for from Pivetta, changing scenes from the hitter's ballparks he's been in throughout his career, Philly and Boston, and now heading to San Diego, a very nice pitcher's ballpark. And even though he was all over the place with his locations, he kept everything in the zone, and then he got away with it because he's in a pitcher's park. So that's usually the thing with Pivetta. You expect somebody who doesn't have great command to have high walk rates, but he's actually got good control. He stays in the zone, but that's why his home run rate's so high, because he's living in the zone so much. But pitching in San Diego, the home runs are going to be down, and that's how he got away with it here. And it'll help too when you have 2 extra inches of IVB on your fastball, and he's got his IVB. He was already 98th percentile at like 19 inches of IVB last year on the 4-seam. Up to 22 inches in this start. Absolutely bonkers. If he can keep that up, that's going to be one of the best fastballs in baseball. And it really doesn't matter what else he throws with it, but he's got that curve that's dope as well. It was pretty much just those two pitches in that one, though he did throw in the mix in the sweeper and the changeup, but I think he'll be fine with a 22 IVB fastball and that dope curve there. Should be fine there with Pivetta. He gets the Cubs next. I'm starting him there, and I'm excited for a breakout season here from Nick Pivetta on the Padres. Next, we'll talk about Jacob DeGrom's season debut as he helped the Rangers to win versus the Red Sox, tossing 5 shutout innings, allowing 2 hits and 2 walks while striking out 6. He induced 16 whiffs to earn the Gallows Ball, and 32% CSW across 73 pitches. So Jacob DeGrom back, earning a ton of whiffs. Fastball was up to 96.7 miles per hour, so inching up. We saw it down at 95 during spring training, but nice to see it up. And I expect it to continue to rise, and maybe we can see it get back all the way to 99. But I don't think he's going to need that necessarily. He really relied on his whole arsenal in this one. We saw the slider being his most used offering and the changeup getting a ton of swings and misses and strikeouts, and the curveball being a pitch that can be used to steal strikes. So I think he's always had a complete arsenal. Now he's really going to be tested as a pitcher, how he's able to mix those pitches, mix speeds and locate things. But DeGrom proved here that he has the ability to do that. And even with diminished velocity and diminished stuff, I still think he's going to be an elite ace this year. That's Jacob DeGrom. Lastly, we have Max Meyer, who helped the Marlins to win versus the Pirates, tossing 5 2/3 innings, allowing 5 hits, 1 run, and 1 walk while striking out 7. He induced 12 whiffs and 34% CSW across 93 pitches. That 34% CSW led baseball, earning Meyer the King Cole in this one. Nick was hyping him up in the playback TV chat today, and he was the cover of the SP Roundup. So big day for Max Meyer here, at least on the pitcherless side, and it's definitely because of his splitter, which was up 2.5 miles per hour to 90.8 miles per hour on the slider. And it wasn't just the velocity that was eye-catching. It was also the production, as he induced 10 whiffs and 38% CSW on the pitch. And honestly, the same thing with Pivetta, that fastball, so good. Meyer here with the slider, he doesn't really need anything else, but he does mix in a mid-90s heater, and he's got some other offerings as well, including a sinker and a sweeper. He's probably got a changeup, or at least I hope he does, but I really don't think it's going to matter if that slider is that good at 91 miles per hour with tons of whiffs. And he's always been known as a prospect with a great slider, so clearly showing that here. I'm pumped to see what Max Meyer can do this year. I'd be grabbing him everywhere. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Sunday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Camilo Doval got save number 1. Ryan Walker is dealing with back tightness, so that's why Doval was in here. But the Giants think Walker will be okay tomorrow, meaning Monday. So we should see Walker back in save situations, but it's clear now that Doval is the first option for saves after Ryan Walker. Next, we have Andrés Muñoz, who pitched a scoreless inning to secure his second save. Kyle Finnegan pitched a perfect inning to secure his first save. Jeff Hoffman pitched a perfect inning as well to secure his first save. Pete Fairbanks pitched a scoreless inning to secure his first save. Kenley Jansen got save number 2 in a scoreless outing. Steven Matz had a 4-inning save for his first of the season. 4 innings, 1 hit, no earned, no walks, and 2 Ks there for Steven Matz. Pretty cool there. And then lastly, Luke Jackson got his first save, scoreless outing there. Really surprising to see him get another save chance after what he did on opening day. I'm surprised Bruce Bochy is doing that, especially after Chris Martin got the save on Saturday, I'm pretty sure. He pitched the 8th in this one, so I don't know why Luke Jackson was back in there, especially because there were a ton of lefties due up in the 9th. It was top of the order. I think it was 9-1-2. David Hamilton led off, and then it was some lefties. Hamilton didn't beat him, but the other lefties did. I think Devers had a double and Duran had a walk, or maybe it was the other way around. But I don't think they want to keep using Jackson in the 9th, especially with lefties up. He's not a guy that has the weapons to get lefties out. So still concerning. Made it through here, but I'd be scared rostering Luke Jackson. Now we'll talk about closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their save, starting with Justin Martinez, who got the final 2 outs of the 8th, and then was followed by AJ Puck, who pitched the 9th up by 4. Not really sure what's going on here. I think both of these guys are still in the mix. Keep them both rostered. Next, we have Trevor McGill, who got an out in the 7th. He's still the closer. I think they wanted to just get him some work. Next, we have David Bednar. He pitched the 9th in a tie game. He got the loss. He threw a wild pitch that allowed the game-winning run to score. So really losing a lot of confidence in David Bednar early on. He's really had a rough start to the season. I'd still hold on to him, as Colin Holderman allowed a run in this one as well. So it looks like Dennis Santana maybe your best shot at getting the next shot at saves in Pittsburgh. But Bednar, I wouldn't drop just yet. Definitely a rough start to the season, though. Next, we have Calvin Fauché, who pitched the eighth in a tie game. Anthony Bender pitched the ninth, so maybe there's something to read into there. Maybe Bender's got a leg up over Fauché with Tinoco on the IL, but I wouldn't be dropping Fauché. I would be putting Bender on my watch list. Lastly, we have Emmanuel Clase, who pitched the ninth up by four. He was perfect other than hitting Jonathan India in the face. I guess it was like in the side of his helmet, so not technically in the face. India left the game immediately. I haven't heard anything about it, but he's probably going to be fine. He walked off. You know, he looked pretty fine. He wasn't bleeding or anything. It hit him in the helmet. But yeah, really scary, especially coming from a guy who throws 99 miles per hour. But if you'd like more info on the relief pitching performances from this whole week, make sure to check out Rick Graham's articles over on pitcherlist.com coming out throughout the week. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Monday, March 31st, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 14 games. I guess not a full slate, misspoke there. The Yankees and the Diamondbacks will be off on Monday. My matchup of the day is Kumar Rocker versus Brady Singer. We got the Rangers versus the Reds. Two very exciting teams, and I think these pitchers are going to be fun to watch. Obviously, Kumar Rocker, young pitcher, has only made three appearances in the major leagues. Here will be his full season debut. I'm excited to see what he can do here in what is going to be deemed his rookie season. So I'm not technically his MLB debut, but looking to see what Kumar Rocker brings to the table in 2025. And Brady Singer making his Cincinnati Reds debut. You know, never been a guy who's touted Brady Singer, especially on the Royals and now heading to Great American Ballpark. I'm not really pumped to see or pumped to roster him in fantasy, but I am hoping that he finds some success here in his team debut against the Rangers. Now we'll take a look at the probable starters. We've got three guys in our auto starts tier. We got Tyler Glasnow versus the Braves, Christopher Sanchez versus the Rockies, and Drew Rasmussen versus the Pirates. Our probably starts tier has four guys, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Jackson Jobe in Seattle. I'm surprised he is rostered so little to be able to be labeled a streamer, but nonetheless, Jackson Jobe in Seattle. I mean, it's a great spot to stream him as well, even though it's early in the season. Maybe he's limited to just four innings or five innings, but I think Jackson Jobe is elite. He should be rostered everywhere just because of his prospect pedigree and the potential that he has to break out and become an ace. But here in Seattle, in that ballpark, I think he's got the ability to turn in a really good start. And you should at least be streaming him and then, you know, praying that he has some success there and that you can continue to hold him throughout the year. I'd also keep an eye out for Chris Paddock in Chicago on the south side against the White Sox. I mean, nothing else to say there. Paddock's decent enough. Basically, any pitcher that's solid enough facing the White Sox, you should probably stream them. I'd also look at Chris Bubich in Milwaukee. Chris Bubich was in the bullpen last year, and he's shifting back to the rotation. He's got some really good stuff, displayed it in the in-spring training as well, maintaining the velocity that he had in the bullpen as well. So I'm excited to see what he can do. His changeup's pretty good. We'll see what he does against the Brewers. In terms of hitter suggestions, I'd look at Padres and Guardians hitters. The pitching matchup there, I think, is ripe for targeting some streaming hitters. Kyle Hart is making his return to the MLB from KBO for the Padres. I think he's a lefty. I shouldn't have said that. Now it looks like I don't know what he is. I'm pretty sure he's lefty. I'm going to stick with that. Kyle Hart facing the Guardians, though, I'm not too sure he's going to have tons of success here. It's always hard making that transition back stateside, but we'll see what he does in the first start. I'd be targeting some Padres hitters here, or at least Guardians hitters there. I would also target Padres hitters as they take on Luis Ortiz of the Guardians. The offense there for San Diego is off to a hot start. They're 4-0 to start the season, so maybe you can continue to ride that hot streak on the offensive side. I'd also look at Royals hitters. They're taking on Elvin Rodriguez, who pitches for the Brewers. The Brewers just got absolutely trounced by the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. I think it's been spoken about enough. I don't think it was just the bats. I think the Brewers pitching had something to do with it. Rodriguez hasn't pitched in the majors since 2023. He's also a young guy. So I'd target some Royals hitters here, see if you can take advantage of Elvin Rodriguez. And now we'll close things out with our relievers to watch. We'll start it off. Jeff Hoffman, I think he's gone back-to-back, so I'd go for Yimi Garcia or Chad Green. Garcia is likely to be the number one shot for saves, but he's pitched a little bit more than Chad Green recently, so maybe Green gets a shot at a save Kenley Jansen has pitched back to back. So, but so has Ben Joyce. So maybe Brock Burke gets the save. I really have no clue here. This is the situation you run into when you got a young guy like Joyce and an old guy like Jansen. You don't want to push Jansen 3 days in a row, especially with his injury history. And you also don't want to push Joyce 3 days in a row with his injury history. So we may get some surprise like Ryan Zephyrjohn save or something like that. But I'd go for Brock Burke if you're shooting for a save on the Angels on Monday. Luke Jackson has pitched in three of the last four for the Rangers, but so have both Chris Martin and Robert Garcia. So I'd shoot for Jacob Webb or Mark Church. I think Webb is a safer chance here, but Church is a higher upside. Church is also less safe. He's probably not somebody you're going to want to roster for a while until he's, you know, worked his way into that closer role. He's the closer of the future there, but Webb is somebody that may be able to take over saves in the meantime if the three guys, Jackson, Martin, and Garcia, can't lock down that role. Jeb Webb might be somebody, but if you're just looking for saves today, Webb or Church for the Rangers. Next, we have Calvin Fauché, who's pitched back-to-back, but so is Anthony Bender. So maybe we'll get George Soriano getting a save today. I really have no clue for the Marlins. David Bednar has pitched three of the last four, but so is Colin Holderman. I'd expect Dennis Santana to get a save for the Pirates today. And then lastly, we got Camilo Doval. Ryan Walker hasn't pitched in the last 2 days, but he's dealing with back tightness apparently. So Duvall could be in line for another save today. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcherlist staff. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. Tune in live on YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.